when she shared her love for ionizing radiation. Of course, in her case, long-term unshielded exposure to unstable isotopes eventually led to chronic aplastic anemia and death in a sanatorium, but you get my point, which is that when I say, "I think I got all I need from Guy. We're done for today," the room erupts into a disappointed groan. Levi and I exchange an amused look. To be clear, we're not friends or anything. One dinner together, one night sleeping in a room that happens to contain 3/4 of my favorite books, and one yawny car ride to Noah Moore's grave, during which he politely respected that I'm not a morning person and remained blissfully quiet, did not make Levi and me friends. We still dislike each other, rue the day we met, wish the pox on the other's house, etc., etc. But it's like last week, over vegan tacos, we managed to form an uneasy, rudimentary alliance. I help him do his thing, and he helps me do mine. It almost feels like we're actually collaborating. Crazy, huh? For lunch, I heat up my ever-so-sad lean cuisine, grab a stack of academic articles I've been meaning to read, and make my way to the picnic tables behind the building. I've been nibbling on chickpeas for about 5 minutes when I hear a familiar voice. B! Guy and Levi are walking toward me, holding paper cups and sandwich bags.
Mind if we join you?
Guy asks. I do, a little, since this paper on electrotherapy isn't going to read itself. But I shake my head. I shoot Levi an apologetic look. Sorry you're stuck eating with me because Guy doesn't know that we're arch enemies. But he doesn't seem to get it, and takes a seat across from me, smiling faintly as though he doesn't mind. I watch the play of muscles under his shirt, and a frisson of warmth licks down my spine. Weird. Guy sits next to me with a grin, and I think to myself, not for the first time, that he's wholesome, charming, and truly a cute guy. This is incredibly objectifying and reductive, and if you tell anyone, I'll flatly deny it. But back in grad school, Annie told me that there are 3 types of attractive men. I don't know if she came up with this taxonomy herself, if Aphrodite announced it to her in a dream, or if she stole it from Teen Vogue. But here they are. There is the cute type, which consists of guys who are attractive in a non-threatening, accessible way, as a combination of their nice looks and captivating personalities. Tim falls into this group, just like Guy and most male scientists, including, I suspect, Pierre Curie. Come to think of it, all the guys who ever hit on me do. Perhaps because I'm small and dress quirky and try to be friendly. If I were a dude, I'd be a cute guy. Cute guys recognize that at some elemental level, and they make passes at me. Then there's the handsome type. According to Annie, this category is a bit of a waste. The handsome guy has the kind of face you see in movie trailers and perfume ads, geometrically perfect and objectively amazing, but there's something inaccessible about him. Those guys are so dreamy, they're almost abstract. They need something to anchor them to reality. A personality quirk, a flaw, a circumscribed interest. Otherwise, they'll float away in a bubble of boredom. Of course, society doesn't exactly encourage handsome guys to develop brilliant personalities, so I tend to concur with Annie. They're useless. Last but not least, the sexy guys. Annie would go on and on about how Levi is the epitome of the sexy guy. But I'd like to formally object. In fact, I don't even acknowledge the existence of this category. It's preposterous. The idea that there are men you can't help yourself from being attracted to, men who give you the tingles, men you can't stop thinking about, men who pop up in your brain like flashes of light after stimulation of the occipital cortex, men who are physical, elemental, primordial, masculine, present, solid. Sounds fake, right?
Hit me.
Guy tells me with a cute guy smile.
What's wrong with my brain?
Nothing, as far as I can tell.
Amazing news. Could you help me convince my ex-wife that I'm certifiably sane?
I'll write you a note.
Nice.
He winks at me. He winks at me a lot, I'm noticing.
So, how are you liking Houston?
I haven't really seen much yet, besides the Space Center.
And a cemetery,
Levi interjects. I give him a dirty look and steal a cluster of his grapes in revenge. He lets me with a small smile.
I could help you out,
Guy offers. Sure, I say distractedly, busy glaring at Levi and making a show of chewing on his grapes.
Really? Uh-huh.
Levi lifts one eyebrow and bites into a sandwich. It feels a lot like a challenge, so I steal a strawberry too.
Maybe we could go to dinner,
Guy says.
Are you free tomorrow night?
Levi and I instantly turn toward him. I mentally rewind the conversation, trying to recall what I agreed to. A date? Exploring Houston? Marriage? No, 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 no! I have zero interest in dating. Zero interest in Guy and sub-zero interest in dating Guy. You know what I do have? Weird, intrusive thoughts. For instance, I'm currently remembering the way Levi's hands felt around my waist as he slid me down his body.
Or this weekend?
Oh! I give Levi a panicked glance. Help, please help.
Thanks, but actually I... Just name the night. I'm flexible and... Guy?
Levi says, voice deep and low.
You might want to take a look at her left hand.
I glance down, confused. My fingers are still clutching the strawberry. What does he... Oh, my grandmother's wedding ring. I put it on this morning. Some good luck for the brain mapping sessions.
Shit, I'm sorry.
Guy immediately apologizes.
I had no idea that you...
Oh, it's fine. I'm not... Married. I want to say, but it would be a waste of the amazing out Levi gave me. I cough. I'm not bothered.
Okay, my apologies again.
He leans toward Levi, asking with a conspiratorial tone.
Out of curiosity, how big's her husband, and how prone to violent rage?
Oh no, I shake my head. He doesn't really
exist. Don't worry,
Levi tells Guy.
Tim's mild-mannered.
I facepalm internally. I can't believe Levi told Guy that I'm married to Tim. It's the worst, most easily disprovable lie ever. Couldn't he make up a random dude?
Should I still get a groin protection cup?
Guy asks. Levi shrugs.
Might be safest.
I look down at my chickpeas. Wishing they were Levi's lunch. Fruit's so much better. Believable lies are so much better.
You're sure you're not mad, B?
Guy asks, a touch concerned.
I didn't mean to make you uncomfortable.
This is what I get for asking the ward ass for help. I give Levi the stink eye, snatch another strawberry, and sigh. Nope, not mad at all. Rika. What do you mean Levi lied and said you're married to Tim? B. He saw how flustered I was and tried to help me out. Rika. First, Guy Fieri has no business putting you in that position. B. Not his name. B. But valid point. Rika. Second, this is a terrible lie. Easily refutable if Guy Fieri talks with literally anyone else who knows you. It's going to bite you in the ass. B. I am aware. Rika. Third, Levi does know you're not married to Tim, right? B. Yeah, he and Tim are buds. They collaborate. Levi was the one who told Tim to find someone better back in grad school. Rika. Honestly, you should have just told Guy Fieri no. You screwed up. B. I know, but you're my sister, and I'm human. I need love and compassion, not judgment. Rika, you need a full psychiatric evaluation. Rika, but heart, heart, heart. I sip on a blueberry smoothie, and look around the busy coffee shop, waiting for Rocio to show up for our first GRE tutoring session. It's probably going to be fine. My marital life, or lack thereof, is unlikely to come up with Guy. And I have other things to think about, like the stimulation protocols I'm creating, or income inequality, or the fact that I haven't seen Felicette in a while. But I think she's been eating the little treats I left for her in my office. Important stuff. Did you know? Rocio greets me, sliding into the chair across from me. That blood is the perfect substitute for eggs. I blink. She takes it as an invitation to continue. 65 grams per egg. Exceedingly similar protein composition. Interesting. Not. You could have blood cake, blood ice cream, blood meringues, blood pappardelle, blood pound cake, blood omelet, or if you prefer, scrambled blood, blood tiramisu, blood quiche. I think I got the gist. Good, she smiles. I wanted to let you know, just in case blood is vegan. I open my mouth to point out several things, but settle on. Thank you, Ro. Very thoughtful of you. Why is your hair wet? Please don't say blood. I went to the gym. I like to channel Ophelia in the lazy river, pretend I'm drowning in a Danish brook after a flimsy willow branch collapsed under my weight. What was she doing on a willow? She was mad for love. Rocio glares at me. And they say a woman's heart is fickle. Right. Sounds like a nice pool. It's like a Sir John Everett Millais painting, except that swim caps are mandatory and medieval dresses forbidden. Fascists. Maybe I should buy the membership after all. You don't need to. It's free for NASA employees. But not for contractors, right? They didn't make me pay. She shrugs and pulls a GRE prep book out of her backpack. Can we start with quantitative reasoning? Though parallelograms make me want to drown myself in a Danish brook again. Half an hour later, the reason my intelligent, math-savvy, articulate RA has been scoring so poorly on the GRE becomes unmistakably clear. This test is too dumb for her. In related news, we're about to murder each other. The correct answer is B, I repeat, seriously considering ripping a page off the book and stuffing it into her mouth. You don't need to solve for other options. X is a factor of Y squared. You're assuming that X is an integer. What if it's a rational number, a real number, or even worse, an irrational number? I guarantee you that X is not an irrational number, I hiss. How do you know? She growls. Common sense! Common sense is for people who are not smart enough to solve for pi. Are you implying that? Hey, girls! What? We bark in unison. Kaylee blinks at us from above a very pink drink. I didn't mean to interrupt. No, I smile reassuringly. Sorry, we got carried away. We're having some issues. She's wearing a purple jumpsuit and heart-shaped sunglasses, and her hair is pulled over her shoulder into a fishtail braid that reaches her ribcage. Her purse is shaped like a watermelon, and her necklace is a pink flower with the letter K in its middle. I want to be her. Aw, she tilts her head. Can I help? There is something earnest about the way she asks, like she actually cares. I ignore Rocio's kicks under the table and ask Kaylee, would you like to join us in fighting the hegemony of the graduate record examination? I'm not sure what reaction I expected, but Kaylee huffing, eye-rolling, and pulling a chair up to our table was not it. It's an indignity. GRE, SATs, all these tests are institutionalized gatekeepers, and the extent to which graduate programs over-rely on them for student admission is obscene. We are two decades into the 21st century, but we're still using a test based on a conceptualization of intelligence that's about as outdated as the Triassic. Graduate school success depends on qualities that are not measured by the GRE. We all know it.
Why aren't we moving toward a holistic approach to graduate admission? Also, the GRE costs hundreds of dollars. Who has the financial solubility for that? Or for the prep courses, the materials, the tutors? Let me tell you who doesn't. Not rich people.
She wags her finger at me, precise and wildly graceful. I am mesmerized.
You know who traditionally does poorly on standardized tests? Women and marginalized individuals. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Groups that are constantly told by society that they're less smart walk into a testing situation anxious as hell and end up underperforming. It's called stereotype threat, and there's tons of literature on that. Just like there's tons of literature showing that the GRE does a terrible job at predicting who'll finish grad school. But the heads of graduate admission all over the country don't care and persist in using an instrument made to elevate rich white men.
She shakes out her hair.
Burn it down, I say.
Burn what down?
All of it,
Kaylee says fiercely with her high-pitched voice. Then she sucks a delicate sip from her straw. I really want to be her. I glance at Rocio and do a double take. She's staring at Kaylee, breathing quickly, lips parted and cheeks flushed. Her right hand clutches the prep book like it's the edge of a ravine.
You okay, Ro?
I ask her. She nods without breaking her stare.
Anyway,
Kaylee continues with a shrug.
Why are we talking about the GRE?
Rocio is taking it, and I was helping her out with... I clear my throat. Mixed results. I believe we were about to shank each other over irrational numbers. Sounds about right, Rocio mumbles.
Oh!
Kaylee waves her hand airily.
You shouldn't be talking about irrational numbers. The thing about the GRE is, the less you know, the better off you are.
I give Rocio my best told you so look. She kicks me again.
If you take a prep class, they teach you little tricks useful to pass the test, more so than actually knowing math.
You've taken the GRE? Rocio asks.
Yep. This manager thing is a temporary gig. I'm starting my PhD in education in the fall at Johns Hopkins.
Rocio frowns. You're going to Johns Hopkins?
Yes! Kaylee nods happily. My parents paid for a prep course, and I have tons of notes. Plus, I remember most of it. Why don't I help you?
Rocio turns to me with an aghast look that almost makes me laugh. Almost. Instead, I grab my smoothie and stand.
It's so lovely of you to offer.
Rocio tries to kick me again, but I slither away. I'm going to check out the gym at the Space Center. Rocio said that it might be free.
It is. Levi had me change your status the other day.
Whose status?
Yours. And Rocio's.
She winks.
I switched you to team members in the system, so you can get some of the perks.
Oh, thank you. That was very
unexpected, out of character. Something you must have made up on the spot, because why would he do that?
Generous.
Levi's awesome. Best boss I ever had. He harassed NASA into giving me health insurance.
She smiles and turns to Rocio, who looks ready to drown herself in a Danish brook again.
Where did you want to start?
Rocio incinerates me with her eyes as I wave goodbye. Honestly, she's in excellent hands. Doesn't even deserve it. On the sidewalk, I take out my phone and quickly type up a tweet. But what would Marie do if one of the major obstacles preventing access to higher education were the GRE, a test that is 1, expensive, 2, poorly predictive of overall graduate school success, and 3, biased against individuals who are lower income, BIPOC, and non-cis males? I slip my phone into my pocket, and my thoughts go back to the gym. Levi probably just wants me to be able to use it so he doesn't have to retrieve me from a different cemetery every week. Can't blame him, honestly. Yeah, that must be it. 11. Nucleus accumbens. Gambling.
Levi, could you send me the newest?
Blueprints are on the server.
he mumbles around the miniature screwdriver he's holding between his teeth. He doesn't look up from the mound of wires and plates he's working on. It's past 9 on a Friday. Everyone else has left. We're alone in the engineering lab, like most nights this week, in what I've come to think of as our hostile, companionable silence. It's very similar to other types of silence, except that I know that Levi doesn't like me, and Levi knows that I know he doesn't like me, and that I don't like him in return. But he doesn't bring it up, and I don't really think about it, because we have no reason to. So yeah, our hostile, companionable silence is basically a regular companionable silence. We sit facing each other at different workbenches. We dim the lights to see the shapes of the outside trees. We focus on our respective tasks. Every once in a while, we exchange comments, thoughts, doubts regarding Blink. We could do the same from our respective offices, but looking up from my laptop and verbally asking a question beats writing it out in an email. Typing out, "Hey Levi," and "Best B," is such a pain. Plus, Levi packs snacks. He brings them to work for himself, but he's lousy at gauging portions and always makes too much. So far, I've had homemade trail mix, guac and saltines, rice cakes, popcorn, pita chips and bean dip, and about 4 kinds of energy balls. Yes, he's a better cook than I'll ever be. No, I'm not too proud to accept his food. I'm not too proud to accept anyone's food. Plus, I've been in Houston for a month, and we're already close to a working version of the prototype. I deserve some celebratory face stuffing. The old blueprint is on the server, not the new one. He takes the screwdriver out of his mouth.
It is. I put it there.
That's not the correct file. He looks up.
Could you check again, please?
I roll my eyes and sigh heavily, but I comply. Because today he made dark chocolate and peanut butter energy balls, and they were life-shatteringly good. Done. Still not here.
Are you sure?
Yes.
It has to be there.
He gives me an impatient look, like I'm pulling him away from the crucial task of securing the country's nuclear codes. It's not. Do you want to bet something on it?
What would you like to bet?
Let's see. His face, when he finds that I'm right, is going to be better than sex. Better than sex with Tim, for sure. $1,000,000.
I don't have $1,000,000. Do you?
Of course I do. I'm a junior scientist. He chuckles. Something flutters inside me. And I ignore it. Let's bet Schrodinger.
I'm not betting my cat.
Because you know you're going to lose.
No, because my cat is 17 and needs regular manual expression of his anal glands. But if you still want him.
I make a face. No, I'm good. I drum my fingers on my biceps, wondering what else Levi has that I want. I could make him cook for me every day for a month, but he's sort of already doing that without realizing. Why change something that works? If I win, you get a tattoo.
Of what?
A goat, alive, I add magnanimously.
Can't.
Why?
Already have one.
I laugh. Oh, I've got it. Your mug. The one that says, Yoda best engineer?
Yeah.
I want one, but it needs to say neuroscientist, of course. He lifts one eyebrow.
This is the equivalent to someone buying their own world's best boss mug. Congratulations, you're officially NASA's Michael Scott.
And proud of it, okay? I say, turning my computer around for him to see. Deal. Come marvel at the lack of blueprints on the server.
Wait, what about me?
What about you?
What will you do if I win?
Oh, I shrug. Whatever you want, I'm right anyway. Would you like my hard-earned $1,000,000?
Nope.
He shakes his head, pensive. Should I come over and express poor Schrodinger's anal glands for the duration of my stay in Houston? Tempting, but Schrodinger is intensely private about his anus.
He taps his masculine, chiseled chin.
Huh? Why am I even noticing?
If I win, you're going to sign up for a 5K here in Houston.
I shrug. Sure, I'll sign up for a...
And you're going to run it.
I burst into laughter. There is no way.
Why?
Because I'm currently on step 4 of my program and still unable to run more than half a mile without collapsing. Running a 5K sounds about as pleasant as bloodletting. By leeches.
I'll run with you.
You mean you'll walk next to me with your 70-mile-long legs?
I'll train you.
Oh, Levi, Levi, you sweet summer child. I point at myself. Tonight, I'm wearing a nose stud, galaxy leggings, and a white tank top. My purple hair is loose on my shoulders. I'm pretty sure one of my back tattoos is visible. Everything about me screams, Levi's kryptonite. You see this scrawny, stunted, unmuscled body? It's built to live in parasitic symbiosis with a couch. It resists training with the force of many million ohms. Levi does stare at my body for a considerable amount of time. But then he looks away, blushed. Poor guy. Must be a tough sight for him.
It doesn't matter, does it? Since you're sure that you'll win.
True, I shrug. Deal. Come taste the bitterness of defeat. He does come, stalking to my bench in a few strides with those ridiculous 70-mile-long legs. However, he doesn't stop in front of the laptop I conveniently turn for him. Instead, he circles around the bench, comes to stand behind me, and then slides the computer in our direction. For me to better witness his impending massacre, I assume. I can't wait to sip your tears out of my new mug, I murmur.
We'll see.
He leans his left hand against the bench and grabs the mouse with the other. Even on my high stool, he's still many inches taller than me, effectively caging me at my seat. It should feel uneasy, suffocating, but he leaves me enough room that I don't mind. Plus, I know it doesn't mean anything, because he's Levi and I'm B. It's actually almost pleasant, the heat he radiates in the blasting AC. He could have a successful second career as a weighted blanket.
This is weird.
I hear the frown in his voice.
The file's missing.
Can the mug be 20 ounces?
It should be here.
He leans forward, and his chin brushes the crown of my hair. It's not terrible. Sort of the opposite.
I saved it.
Maybe you dreamt it. Sometimes in the mornings, I think that I got up and brushed my teeth, even though I'm still in bed. Though with my new mug, I'll be extra motivated to wake up early and have my coffee.
Weird.
Pity he's not paying attention to my gloating. I'm doing a pretty good bit, if I say so myself.
Look.
He types quickly, the inside of his elbow brushing against my upper arms, pulling up a log interface.
See? Someone, me, saved the file at 1:16 p.m. Then at 4:23, someone else removed it.
I know immediately where he's going with this. I tilt my neck back to look up at him, and he's already staring down from 2 inches above. God, his eyes. He invented a new color green. It wasn't me, I blurt out.
How much do you want my cat?
Considerably less now that I know about his colorectal issues.
And my mug?
A lot, but I swear it wasn't me. He hums skeptically. I can feel his breath against my face. Mint with a hint of peanut butter.
I'm inclined to believe you, but only because this is not the first time.
What do you mean?
The frequencies list for the parietal electrodes you sent me yesterday? The one you emailed and put on the server? It wasn't there.
I scowl. But I put it there.
I know. The engineers complained about missing and misplaced files, too. Corrupted stuff. Lots of little things. Probably a server error. Or people screwing up. Can you tell who moved the file?
He types a few more strokes.
Not from the logs. The system isn't coded that way. You know what it can do.
I shake my head, bumping against some spot on his chest.
It can tell me where the file was moved, and if it's still on the server but in a different folder, which in the case of the blueprints is...
He presses the space bar and pulls up an image.
Right here.
Oh, perfect. That's exactly what I was... My teeth click as I shut my mouth. Wait a minute.
What 5K should we sign up for?
He's roaming the inside of his cheek with his tongue.
There's usually a space-themed one in June.
No way, I twist around. The file was not where it was supposed to be.
The terms of the bet were that the file should be on the server.
He gives me a satisfied smile.
Bet you're glad I didn't agree to the anal expression.
You know I meant in a specific folder.
How unfortunate that you didn't specify then.
He puts a hand on my shoulder in mock reassurance. I seriously consider biting it off. And it's ridiculous how much every part of him dwarfs every part of me. Also ridiculous? The way those stupid intrusive thoughts of his body pressed against mine can't seem to let up. And that having him so close reminds me of his thigh pushing up between my legs, solid and insistent against the seam of my...
What are you two doing?
Boris is standing in the entrance of the lab, and my first instinct is to push away from Levi and scream that nothing happened, we were just working. But the distance between us is perfectly appropriate. It just feels like it isn't, because Levi is so large. And warm, because he's Levi.
We were just about to sign up for a 5K,
he says.
How are you, Boris? A 5K, huh?
He stays under the doorframe, studying us with his customary tired expression.
Actually, I come bearing news. Bad news? Not good. Bad, then.
Boris comes closer, holding a printout.
You guys planning to go to human brain imaging?
HBI is one of many academic conferences in neuroscience. It's not particularly prestigious, but over the years, it has cultivated a party reputation. It takes place in fun cities, with lots of satellite events and industry sponsorships. It's where young, hip neuroscientists network and get drunk together. But I'm not hip, and Levi is not a neuroscientist. No, I tell Boris. Where is it this year?
New Orleans, this coming weekend.
Fun. You planning on going? He shakes his head and holds out the printout.
No, but someone is. Magtech,
Levi says, reading from above my shoulder.
We've been keeping tabs on them. The company will present a version of their helmets at HBI. Have they filed for a patent? Not yet.
Then going public seems like...
a less than intelligent move. I think they're trying to get visibility to pull in new investors, which is a great opportunity for us to find out where they're at.
You're suggesting we send someone to New Orleans, have them attend HBI and report back on what Magtech's progress is compared to ours?
No.
Boris smiles for the first time since stepping inside the room.
I'm ordering the two of you to do that.
I just don't think that driving to New Orleans to play Inspector Gadget is the best use of our time. I tell Levi as he walks me home like he insisted on. Houston is dangerous at night. You never know who's lurking around. Either you let me walk you home or I follow 10 feet behind you. Your choice. He's pushing his bike, which he apparently rides to work most days. Overachiever. His helmet, strapped to his belt, bounces against his thigh every few steps. The soothing rhythm provides a solid backdrop to my bitching.
We're at least Inspector Columbo.
Gadget outranks Columbo, I point out. Don't get me wrong. I see the value of keeping tabs on the competition, but wouldn't it be better to send someone else?
No one else is as familiar with Blink as we are. And you're the only person who knows the neuroscience.
Fred did take that class in undergrad.
Levi smiles.
At least it's over the weekend. We won't miss work days.
I lift one eyebrow.
We've both worked every single weekend. Why are you taking this so well?
He shrugs.
I pick my battles with Boris carefully.
Isn't this worth fighting for? We're talking about 2 days in close quarters with the person you most despise in history.
Elon Musk is coming too?
No, me.
He sighs heavily, rubbing his forehead.
We've been over this, B. Besides, the team keeps screwing up basic stuff like file backup,
he adds wryly.
I wouldn't trust them with espionage.
He smiles when he says the last word, and my heart jumps. I'm inexplicably getting cute guy vibes from him. Maybe because when he's amused, he looks damn cute.
I still think it's not human error, I say, trying not to think about things like cuteness.
Either way, I'll call a meeting with the engineers and scare them into being more careful.
Wait. I stop under my building. You can't do that if you're not sure that it's someone on the team.
I'm sure.
But you have no proof.
He looks at me with a puzzled expression.
You don't want to accuse them of something they might not have even done, do you?
They did.
I huff, frustrated.
What if it's a weird fluke?
It's not.
But you...
I press my lips together. Listen, we're co-leaders. We should make disciplinary decisions together, which means that you can't accuse anyone of anything until I'm on board too. And that's not going to happen until I see actual proof that someone on the team is doing this.
He's looking down at me with a soft, amused expression, as if he finds my irritation particularly endearing. What a sadist.
Okay, I prompt him. He nods.
Okay.
He unlocks his helmet and ties it under his chin. I most definitely do not notice the flex of his biceps.
And B.
Yeah? He mounts the bike and starts riding away.
I'll let you know which 5K I settle on.
He's giving me his back, but I flip him off anyway. 12. Ventral striatum. Yearning. Schmack.
That GRE tweet is becoming a bit of a thing, huh?
It sure is. If by bit he means a lot, and if by thing he means shitstorm. I have no idea how it even happened. The day I sent the tweet, I went to bed after reading comments of people talking about their negative experiences with the test. When I woke up, there was a hashtag, #FairGraduateAdmissions, and dozens of associations of women and minorities in STEM had announced a GRE strike, encouraging students to turn in their grad school applications without the GRE. At Olivia Way Bio, if everyone does it, grad programs will have no choice but to evaluate us based on our experiences, CV, previous efforts, and skills, basically what they should already be doing. Have I mentioned how much I love women in STEM? Because I love women in STEM. 2 hours later, a journalist from The Atlantic messaged me, asking for an interview. Then CNN, then Chronicle of Higher Ed, then Fox News, as if. I paired up with Schmack to reach an even wider audience, and together we issued a 1,000-word essay summarizing the lack of scientific evidence supporting the use of the GRE as an admission tool. I encouraged news outlets to interview the women who started the hashtag, except for Fox News, which I left on read. Several people came forward and talked to the media about the number of minimum wage hours necessary to afford the test, about their frustration when wealthier classmates with access to private tutoring performed better, about the crushing disappointment of being rejected by dream institutions despite perfect GPAs and research experience because their scores didn't meet some arbitrary cutoff by a few percentage points. They're still doing the rounds, with more people opening up. Hashtag Fair Graduate Admissions is a movement, and it has a real chance at getting rid of this stupid, unfair test. I've been all a flutter. You know who else has been a flutter? Rocio, who barged into the office declaring, I won't be preparing for the GRE anymore, in solidarity with my brethren. Johns Hopkins will have to acknowledge how badass I am from my other application materials. I looked up from my laptop and nodded. I support that. You know why this is happening, right? She leaned conspiratorially over my desk. The other day, we talked about how shitty the GRE is, and now people are rallying against it because Marie started the conversation. It can't be a coincidence. Oh, I stammered. Well, it probably is just a coincidence. There are no coincidences, she said, beautiful dark eyes staring into mine. B, we both know who I owe this to. Oh, I'm sure. La Llorona. She took her phone out of her pocket and showed me pictures of beautiful creeks. Her eyes shone. I've been visiting nearby places where she was sighted, leaving little tokens of appreciation. Tokens? Yes. Tarots, poems I wrote extolling the beauty of the macabre, pentagrams made of twigs, the usual. The usual. I think it's her way of saying, Rocio, I recognize a kindred spirit, perhaps even a successor in you. She smiled at me, setting her bag on her desk. I am so happy, Bee. I smiled back and went back to work, relieved that Rocio doesn't suspect who's behind WWMD. Sometimes I wonder if Dr. Curie, too, had a secret identity she couldn't reveal. Period-wise, she could have been Jack the Ripper. Never say never, right? Marie, do you think we're actually going to get rid of the GRE? Schmack, we're closer than ever, for sure. Marie, agreed. Thank you for helping out, by the way. Schmack and I have the same number of followers, but completely different reaches. I hate thanking dudes for sausage referencing. But truth is, there are plenty of male academics who'd rather guzzle curdled milk than engage with WWMD. Which is fine, because I'd love nothing more than pouring gallons of curdled milk down their throats. Still, hashtag Fair Graduate Admissions can use all the support it can get. Marie, how's the girl? Schmack, how's Camel Dick? Marie, astonishingly, we're almost getting along. If we haven't come to blows yet, are we even collaborating? Also, nice deflection. Tell me about the girl. Schmack. Everything's fine. Marie. Fine has variable definitions. Narrow it down. Schmack. How narrow? Marie. Very. Schmack. Okay. Narrowingly, things are great, in the worst possible way. We've been working together a lot because that's what the project demands, which might be why I'm on my fourth beer on a Thursday night. Marie, why is working together bad? Schmack, it's just, I know things about her. Marie, things? Schmack, I know what she loves to eat. What shows she watches, what makes her laugh, her opinions on pets. I know her dislikes, aside from me. I've been cataloging a million little quirks of hers in my head, and they are enchanting. She is enchanting. Smart, funny, an incredible scientist. And there are things. Things I think about. But I'm drunk and this is inappropriate. Marie, I love inappropriate. Schmack, do you? Marie, sometimes. Hit me. Schmack, I need you to know that I'd never do anything to make her uncomfortable. Marie, Schmack, I know that. And if you ever did, I'd cut your dick off with a rusty scalpel. Schmack, fair. Marie, tell me. The clock in the kitchen ticks on. Late-night cars make soft noises past the window, and the screen of my phone goes black. I don't think Schmack will continue. I don't think he'll open up. And it makes me sad, even though I don't know anything about his life. I get the impression that if he doesn't do it with me, he won't with anyone else. My eyes drift closed, accustomed to the dark, and that's when my screen lights up again. The air rushes out of my lungs. Schmack.
I know what she smells like. This little freckle on her neck when she pulls up her hair. Her upper lip is a little plumper than the lower. The curve of her wrist when she holds a pen. It's wrong, really wrong, but I know the shape of her. I go to sleep thinking about it. And then I wake up, go to work, and she is there, and it's impossible. I tell her stuff I know she'll agree to, just to hear her hum back at me. It's like hot water down my fucking spine. She's married. She's brilliant. She trusts me. And all I think about is taking her to my office, stripping her, doing unspeakable things to her. And I want to tell her. I want to tell her that she's luminous. She's so bright in my mind, sometimes I can't focus. Sometimes I forget why I came into the room. I'm distracted. I want to push her against a wall, and I want her to push back. I want to go back in time and punch her stupid husband on the day I met him, and then travel back to the future and punch him again. I want to buy her flowers, food, books. I want to hold her hand, and I want to lock her in my bedroom. She's everything I ever wanted, and I want to inject her into my veins, and also to never see her again. There's nothing like her. And these feelings, they are fucking intolerable. They were half asleep while she was gone, but now she's here and my body thinks it's a fucking teenager, and I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. There is nothing I can do, so I'll just not. I can't breathe. I can't move. I can't even swallow the knot in my throat. I might actually cry. For him. For this girl, who'll never know that someone holds these mountains of want inside. And maybe for me, because I've made the choice to never feel this, never again, never ever. And I realize now for the first time, what a terrible price I will pay. What a loss it will be. Marie. Oh, Schmack. What else is there to say? He's in love with someone who doesn't love him back, who is married. This story has no happy ending, and I think he knows, because he only replies with, Schmack. Yeah. Hey, B.
I set aside my article and smile at Lamar. What's up?
Not much. Just wanted to tell you that I've updated the log system on the server.
Oh?
Yeah, nothing is changing on your end, but now users removing, replacing, or modifying files are automatically tracked. If something's iffy, we'll know who's responsible.
Great, I frown. Why did you do that?
Because of the issues.
The issues?
Yeah, missing files and all that. Levi called an engineering meeting to tear us a new one and asked me to change the server code.
He shrugs sheepishly.
Sorry about the mess.
He slips out of my office, leaving me to stare at my article. I am still staring 3 minutes later when someone else knocks on the doorframe.
What's with your return air vent?
Levi's in the entrance, filling it like Lamar couldn't quite manage.
It's missing the grill. I'll call maintenance.
No. I swivel around. It's how Felicette gets inside at night, to eat the treats I leave for her. He lifts one eyebrow.
You want an uncovered vent because you're imaginary cat.
She's not imaginary. I found a paw print next to my computer the other day. I texted it to you. And he replied, looks like a splotch of lean cuisine. I hate him.
Right. About tomorrow. We should head out early since New Orleans is over 5 hours away. I don't mind picking up the rental and driving. You can sleep in the car, but I'd like to leave around 6.
You called the meeting. He cocks his head. A wisp of black hair falls on his brow.
Excuse me?
You told the engineers about the missing files.
Ah.
He presses his lips together.
I did.
I stand without knowing why, put my hands on my hips, still not knowing why. I asked you not to.
B, it needed to be done.
We agreed that we wouldn't until we had proof. He folds his arms on his chest, a stubborn line to his shoulders.
We didn't agree. You told me you didn't want to call a full meeting about it, and I didn't. But I'm head of the engineering division, and I decided to tell my team about the issue.
I snort. Your team is everyone but me and Rocio. Nice loophole.
Why does it bother you so much?
Because.
You're going to have to be a little more articulate than that.
Because you did it behind my back, I bristle. Just like a month ago, when you didn't tell me about NASA trying to get Blink canceled.
It's not the same at all.
It is in theory, and it's a matter of principle. I bite the inside of my cheek. If we're co-leaders, we need to agree before taking disciplinary measures.
No disciplinary measure was taken. It was a 5-minute meeting in which I asked my team to stop messing around with important files. I run a tight ship, and my team knows it. No one made a big deal about this except for you.
Then why didn't you tell me you were going to do it? His eyes harden, hot and dark and frustrated. He scans my face, silent, and I feel the tension rise in the room. This is about to escalate to a full-blown fight. He'll yell at me to mind my business. I'll throw my lean cuisine at him. We'll pummel each other. People will rush to separate us. We will cause a spectacle. But he just says,
I'll pick you up at 6.
His tone is steely, inflexible, cold. So different from the one he's used with me for the past 5 weeks. I wonder why that is. I wonder if he hates me. I wonder if I hate him. I wonder so much that I forget to answer him. But it doesn't matter, because he's already gone. 13. Superior Calliculi. Will you look at that? 1 hour, 24 minutes, and 17 seconds. 18. 19. 20. That's how long I've been in this Nissan Altima that smells faintly like lemon and faux leather and Levi's delicious masculine scent. And that's how long we've been silent. Thoroughly, wholeheartedly silent. It's going to be a craptastic weekend. We're going to play 007 while barely talking to each other. I see no flaw in this plan. Is this my fault? Perhaps. Perhaps I initiated this remarkably immature, I must admit, standoff when I didn't say hi back to him this morning. Perhaps I'm the culprit. But I don't give a flying squirrel because I'm mad. So I'm leaning into it. I'm hoarding all of my grievances against Levi and bulking them up into a big, withering, incandescent supernova of silent treatment that, honestly, I'm not sure he's noticed. He did lift his eyebrow after I refused to say hi in my best impression of an 11-year-old just done reading The Babysitter's Club. But he shrugged it off pretty quickly. He put on a CD, Mer de Noms by A Perfect Circle, and God, his amazing musical taste is like a knife to my ovaries, and started driving. Impassible. Relaxed. I bet he's not even thinking about it. I bet he doesn't care. I bet I'm here playing nervously with my grandmother's ring, sulking to the rhythm of Judith, while he's probably pondering the laws of thermodynamics, or whether to join the no-poo movement. What do dudes even think about all the time? The Dow Jones? MILF porn? Their next date? Does Levi date? I'm sure he does, given the number of people who seem to think of him as a sexy guy. He might not be married, but maybe he's in a long-term relationship. Maybe he's deeply in love, like Schmack. Poor Schmack. My chest hurts in a messy, confusing way when I think about what he said. About Levi feeling similarly intense, scary, powerful things for a woman. About Levi doing the things Schmack talked about doing to her. I shiver, wondering why stray memories of Levi pressing me against a wall are still popping up in my head. Wondering whether the girlfriend he might not even have would be extraordinarily lucky or the very opposite. Wondering why I'm even wondering.
I'm sorry.
I turn so fast I pull a muscle. What?
I'm sorry.
For what? I massage my neck. He stares at the road and lifts one eyebrow.
Is this some educational technique? Apologizing for dummies?
No, I'm honestly befuddled.
Then, I'm sorry for calling the meeting without asking for your approval.
I squint. Really?
Really what?
Are you actually apologizing?
Yep.
Oh, I nod. To be precise, then, you did ask for my approval, and I explicitly did not give it.
Correct.
I think he's biting the inside of his cheek to avoid smiling.
I didn't heed your explicit advice. I wasn't trying to undermine your authority or to act like your opinion is irrelevant. I think,
he presses his lips together.
Actually, I know I'm overly invested in Blink, which makes me overly controlling and bossy. You're right. It was the second time I didn't discuss important issues with you.
He finally looks at me.
I'm sorry, B.
I blink several times. Wow.
Wow?
That was an excellent apology. I shake my head, disappointed. How am I supposed to keep up my very adult silent treatment for the next 3.5 hours?
You were planning to stop once we got to New Orleans.
I wasn't, but realistically, well-executed cold shoulders require an enormous amount of upkeep, and I'm first and foremost lazy. He laughs softly.
Should we switch albums then?
Why?
I thought late 90s grunge might fit your mood, but if you're outgrowing your wrath, maybe we can listen to something a little less...
angry?
Yeah.
What are our options? There's something exquisitely weird about Levi Ward telling me his phone's passcode, 338-338, and letting me poke around his music folder. His collection doesn't include a single embarrassing Nickelback song. I hate him. It's a mix of 90s bands, my decade of choice, except that they're all... I opt for shuffle, settle back into my seat to gaze at the beautiful landscape, and give him the only criticism I can think of. You do know women make music too, right?
What does that mean?
Nothing, I shrug. Just that the entirety of your music library is angry white boys. He frowns.
Not true.
Right. That's why you have exactly... I scroll down for a few seconds. More seconds. A minute. A grand total of 0 female-performed songs on your phone.
That's not possible.
And yet, his scowl deepens.
It's just a coincidence.
Okay,
I'm not proud of it, but it's possible that my musical taste was influenced by the fact that in my formative years, I too was an angry white boy.
I snort. I bet you were. Well, if you ever want to work through that rage productively, I could recommend some singer-songwriters. There's something on the side of the road. I crane my neck to see better. Oh my God. He gives me a worried look.
What's going on?
Nothing. I wipe my eyes. Nothing.
B, are you... crying?
No, I lie poorly.
Is it about female singer-songwriters?
He says, panicky.
I'll buy an album. Just let me know which one is best. Honestly, I don't know enough about them to... No, I... There was a dead possum on the side of the road. Oh. I have issues with roadkill.
Issues?
It's just, animals are so cute. Except for spiders, but spiders are not really animals.
They are.
And who knows where the possum was going? Maybe she had a family. Maybe she was bringing home food to kids who now wonder where mommy is. I'm making myself cry harder. I wipe my cheek and sniffle.
I'm not sure wildlife abides by the rules of traditional nuclear family structure.
Levi notices my glare and instantly shuts up. He scratches his nape and adds,
It's sad.
It's okay. I'm fine. I'm emotionally stable.
His lips curl up.
Are you?
This is nothing. Tim used to make me play this stupid guess the roadkill game to toughen me up. And once I literally ran out of tears.
Levi's jaw hardens visibly.
And when I was 12, we saw a family of splattered hedgehogs on a Belgian highway. And I cried so hard that when we stopped to get gas, a federal police agent questioned my uncle on suspicion of child maltreatment.
Got it. No stops until New Orleans.
No. I promise I'm done crying. I'm an adult with a shriveled, hardened heart now.
He gives me a skeptical glance, but then says,
Belgium, huh?
And his voice is curious.
Yeah, but don't get too excited. It was the Flemish part.
I thought you said you were from France.
I'm from all over the place.
I take off my sandals and push my legs against the dashboard, hoping Levi won't take offense at my bright yellow nail polish and my incredibly ugly pinkies. I call them the Quasimotos.
We were born in Germany. My father was German and Polish, and my mother half Italian, half American. They were very nomadic. My dad was a technical writer, so he could work anywhere. They'd settle in one place, stay for a few months, then move to a new one. And our extended family was very scattered. So when they died, we...
They died?
Levi turns to me wide-eyed. Yeah. Freak car accident. Airbags didn't work. They'd been recalled, but... I shrug. We'd just turned 4.
We?
He's more invested in my life story than I expected. I thought he just wanted to fill the silence.
Me and my twin sister. We don't really have memories of our parents. Anyway, after their death, we were sent from relative to relative. There was Italy, Germany, Germany again, Switzerland, the US, Poland, Spain, France, Belgium, the UK, Germany again, a brief stint in Japan, the US again, and so on.
And you'd learn the language?
More or less. We were enrolled in local schools, which, total pain, having to make new friends every few months. There were times I thought in so many languages I didn't even speak, I couldn't understand the inside of my own head. Not to mention we'd always be the kids with an accent, the kids who didn't really get the culture. So we never properly fit in, and shouldn't you be monitoring the road instead of staring at me?
He blinks repeatedly, as if shaking off the shock, and then looks straight ahead.
Sorry,
he mumbles.
Anyway, there were lots of countries, lots of relatives. Eventually, we landed in the US with my maternal aunt for the last 2 years of high school.
I shrug. I've been here ever since.
And your sister?
Rika's like my parents used to be, all wanderlustful. She left as soon as she legally could, and for the past decade, she's been going from place to place, doing odd jobs, living day by day. She likes to just be, you know?
I laugh.
I'm positive that if my parents were alive, they'd gang up with Rika against me for not loving to travel like they do. But I don't.
Rika's all about seeing new places and making new memories. But to me, if you constantly go after new things, there's never enough of anything. I run a hand through my hair, playing with the purple tips. I don't know. Maybe I'm just lazy.
It's not that,
Levi says. I glance up.
You want stability. Permanency.
He nods, as if he just found the missing piece of a puzzle, and the resulting picture suddenly makes sense.
To be somewhere long enough to build a sense of belonging.
Hey, Freud, I say mildly. You done with the unsolicited therapy? He flushes.
That will be $300.
Seems like the going rate.
Are you and your sister identical?
Yes, though she insists that she's prettier. That dumbass. I roll my eyes fondly.
Do you see her often?
I shake my head. I haven't seen her in person in almost 2 years. And even then, it was 2 days, a layover in New York on her way to Alaska from... I have no clue. I've long lost track. But we talk on the phone a lot. I grin. For example, I bitched to her about you.
Flattering,
he smiles.
Must be nice to be close with your siblings.
You're not? Did you drive a rift between you and your brothers with your bad habit of doing stuff without clearing it with them first? He shakes his head, still smiling.
There is no rift. Just, what's the opposite of a rift?
A closing?
Yeah, that.
Whatever the state of his relationship with his brothers is, he doesn't seem happy about it, and I feel a pang of guilt. Sorry, I didn't mean to imply that your family hates you.